All right, we're beginning here on the Mishnah on Bet Amud Aleph in Masechet Bava Kamma. We're getting also Seder Nezikin. And so just as a little background introduction to Seder Nezikin as well as to Bava Kamma. First thing to note is that the majority of the torts that are found in the Torah are found in Parshat Mishpatim. What's interesting about Parshat Mishpatim is that Parshat Mishpatim doesn't look very different than Hammurabi's code. And therefore, it raises issues about how come the Torah has dinim that almost identical to Hammurabi's code. But if you look carefully in the Torah, the placement of Parshat Mishpatim is between Perek Chaf in Shmot, which is Matan Torah, and Perek Chaf Dalet at the end of Parshat Mishpatim, which is also about Mamad Har Sinai. The placement of Parshat Mishpatim between two prakim that deal with Mamad Har Sinai comes to emphasize that Parshat Mishpatim, the issues of Ben Adam Lechavero and civil law, are part and parcel of Matan Torah and not separate or not some sort of code of law that is like the Hammurabi's code, but part of our Avodat Hashem in terms of keeping and following the Mishpatim. Just to note, there are key differences between what the Torah lays out in Mishpatim and Hammurabi's code. Just give you one example to understand the Torah's chidush, or what the Torah did in terms of what Hashem gave the Torah, how He changed in giving us the Torah, the Hammurabi's code, to a way that puts the stamp of the Torah and Hashem on it and makes it very different in its outlook. If you want to read about it more extensively, Kasuto wrote a whole thing on the comparing and contrasting the Hammurabi's code with that which is found in Parshat Mishpatim. One example, differences, it comes from the word sanctuary. A sanctuary is a temple or a holy place where someone can seek sanctuary from punishment. So for instance, if someone killed and they ran to the holy temple, they were granted sanctuary because in the holy temple we don't take anyone, meaning that there is some protection that is afforded by the God, the deity, to those that have done wrong, even though they really are culpable for their acts. On the other hand, the Torah says straight out, "Mi'im bizbechi tikachen olamut," that you will take from the mizbeach and he will be killed. Meaning that there's no such thing as sanctuary. Someone who kills someone is culpable for killing, and running to God is not going to save you from the culpability or the obligations that you brought upon yourself from killing other people. So there is a key difference between what the Torah lays out versus Hammurabi's code, and in that, you see a key difference, meaning that people are responsible, and that Ben Adam LeMakom can't override Ben Adam LeChaverom. You can't run to God to save you from the fact that you killed or you did something that was inappropriate. And so there is a key difference, but highlights that nature of those differences. So that's the first thing in terms of torts, in terms of Parshat Mishpatim. Second is the placement of Seder Nezikin here, the Gemara in Shabbat and Daf Lamed Aleph, Vaya Emunat Itecha Chosein Yeshuot Chokma Vedat. And there it says Yeshuot is Seder Nezikin. That Seder Nezikin is the Yeshuot, is the salvation that comes. That perspective has a number of manifestations. One, of course, is it allows people to live together. It allows people to be in a civil society, but also brings Yeshuot in the sense of here it requires the individual in many cases to take action to curb their own rights for the benefit of other people. Meaning that in protecting other people, sometimes we have to give up our own rights or our own property or possessions in order to prevent damage or detrimental activity towards other parties. In that sense, it really shows a tremendous amount of self-discipline, but also being mavir midotav and giving to others. And so much about what the Nevi'im spoke about in terms of Ben Adam Lechavero and how we treat other people, and that the prominence of that issue of treating other people and not saying that somehow religion or Ben Adam LeMakom can override, but rather, Ben Adam LeChaverot was an important aspect and a fundamental aspect of the salvation that will come because we treat each other properly. And that's what brings about Mashiach, or the redemption for Klal Yisrael, which the Navi speaks out and says that chesed, emet, tzedakah, mishpat. These are the fundamental ideas that bring about the geulah. The Seder Nezikin, we begin with Baba Kama, but as it's laid out, we have Baba Kama, Baba Metzia, Baba Batra, and Baba means shar, Kama means the beginning or first shar, Metzia is the middle shar, Batra is the latter or the last shar, and as the Gemara notes in other places, Kula Nezikin Masechta Chadahi, that all of this was one big Masechta, meaning Baba Kama, Baba Metzia, and Baba Batra were one large Masechta, that are later on subdivided into three Masechtot, which we know as Baba Kama, Baba Metzia, and Baba Batra, and their names themselves almost hint to that, or show that they were one big unit that was subdivided. The subdivision, and as the Rambam notes, breaks it up into Baba Kama, which deals with issues of hezek, of damage to others, Baba Metzia, which talks about the responsibilities of parties like Shomrim and interactions between parties and responsibilities between them. And Baba Batra, which deals with, we'll call it neighborly issues. So when you're talking about Baba Kama and why this is first is because it deals with the prevention of Nezek. And that is fundamental. In order to have a civil society, in order for things to work out between people, the first thing you have to do is prevent damage from happening. And that's the most deleterious of the issues that can come up between parties is when you damage another party or damage the other party's possessions. So of course, that's the first thing we want to address in terms of extending that into Gzela and Gneva as well, which we'll see later in the Masechta. Baba Metzia deals with not Nezek or damage to other parties, but Shomrim. In issues where there are obligations or agreements between the parties, and then there's a breach or a failure in that agreement. What happens in those situations? And that's what Baba Metzia deals with. Baba Batra is a Masechta, as the Rambam notes, that really does not derive directly from the Torah, but rather from the more general command, as the Ramban says, Vasita Yashar Vatov, to do what is right and proper. Whereas Baba Kama, as we're going to see in a second, the psukim are almost explicit in Mishpatim. Baba Metzia, Parshiyot HaShomrim, is also found in Mishpatim. Baba Batra, which deals with issues of more intangible nezek and proper neighborly conduct, that is mostly what he calls Me'inyan HaSevara. These are logical and proper ways to behave, almost etiquette, but they're not things that come directly out of the psukim, but rather from a more general principle of Vasita Yashar V'Tov, to do that which is right. And that will explain the order of the Masechtot over here. Now, in particular, in dealing with Masechet Baba Kama, introduction to Baba Kama, we have to ask a fundamental question. And that fundamental question will, in many ways, color how we view Baba Kama. And that is, what is the point of paying for damages that one does? So it seems obvious that when someone damages someone else's property, that you have to make reparations, restitution for the damage that you did. But the question you have to ask is there only restitution and reparation being made here? Or is there an isur to be mazik your friend? When you do damage to another party, have you violated an isur in the Torah? Or are you simply creating a monetary obligation? An easy nafkamina between those two views is, what happens if a person decides that he wants to destroy his friend's car and pay for it? So now, if it's simply restitution to be paid for the damage that's done, then go ahead, you damage this car, you're going to pay for it. There's no problem with that. May not be the nicest thing, may not be what we would expect from people, but in that way you would not be in violation of an isur. And the Mabit actually takes an approach like that, that nizakin are simply reparations for restitution for the damage done. But, as David's pointing out, that doesn't sit well with us, because we would have a sense that there's a moral obligation, that it would be immoral for someone to act in such a manner, and to consider that to be just fine because you make restitution. So most of the Rishonim believe that not only is there a need for payment and a need for restitution in the cases of Nezek, there's also a violation of an Isur. Now, that's easier said than done. which is once you've established or once you believe that there is an Isur with regards to Hezek, what is the Isur that you're in violation of? So there are Rishonim who look at it as being subsumed under the more general principle of Vahafta the Reacha Kamocha, like the Yad Ramah, the Rosh brings Darcha Darche Noam, that these are more general principles that govern our relationship between different parties. And therefore, there's an Isur of Hezek, not from a particular Isur, but from the more broad Isurim, or principles of the Torah, of Avdal Recha Kamocha, Darchea, Darchei Noam. In addition to that, as David points out, there are other Rishonim who want to suggest, like the Rabbeinu Yonah, that the restriction or the Isur comes out of Lo Tigzol, to not steal. That this is an appendage, a sapach to the Isur of Lo Tigzol, to not steal from other people. And when one does damage to another party, in essence, they are stealing from them. Even if they are to make reparations for a matter, it still would be, in a sense, subsumed under the Isur of Lo Tigzol. We have other achronim that introduce other possibilities of what the Isur is. Chasam Sofer, who says that the issue is Ushmartem Odo Nafshotechem and Al Tamodo Dam Reacha, and all of these restrictions against not taking care of oneself, taking care of others, also brings with them that there is a geder of guarding oneself and other parties from Nezek. And therefore it's subsumed under those Yisurim of Lo Tamod Al Dam Reacha, Shmortem Od Anafshu Techem. Tekilat Yaakov says that it's a dinin Hashavat Aveda. That just like by Hashavat Aveda, you see a lost object of your friend, you have to return it. And it says, Lo Yuchol Li'Italeim, you're not allowed to turn away and ignore it, because then you're causing damage to your friend. So obviously, if you actively damage your friend, then you're in violation of Lo Yuchol Li'Italeim when it comes to Nezek. The Rabbeinu Chananel suggests that the pasuk that's found by the shore, Tam, that says, Velo Yishmerenu Ba'alav, that the owners did not guard the item, that's the source for the Isur by Nezek, Velo Yishmerenu Ba'alav, that you didn't take care of it. Interestingly, there are some achronim that also suggest that the issue of Nezek, or the Isur of Nezek, is Baal Tashchit, which is the wasting of items of a property. So for instance, if a person pulls a tree out of his field for no reason, he's in violation of Baal Tashchit, because he's ruining a tree, a beautiful growing thing, for no reason whatsoever. He has no purpose in doing that. That's Baal Tashchit. So similarly, when someone does damage to another party, that would also be a violation of Baal Tashchit, which is that you're ruining something with, quote-unquote, no toelet, with no purpose to that, because, obviously, you're not doing anything that's beneficial to yourself. Now, even if you believe that there is an Isur, there may be a reason or a necessity to differentiate between the nature of the damage that is done. We know that damage can be caused in different ways. One is Adama Mazik, which is an individual who does damage, whether that's to other party's property or to another person themselves. That's called chovel, according to the way the Rambam lays it out, chovel u'mazik. But there's also a different form of nezek, which is what the Rambam codifies as niske mamon, which is when your property or where your ownership causes damage. So for instance, your shore goes out and does damage. So that's also a form of damage, but less directly connected to you because you're not doing the damage, but your monetary possessions are doing damage. So you could see and you could argue that maybe there's a difference, that the Isur only applies when it's a chovel, when it's the Adama Mazik, whereas when it is Mimona Mazik, maybe there would not be an Isur because there you lack the intent that is needed to say that there is an Isur. Truthfully, the Tur, the Rambam, do not differentiate, and they actually say that the Isur seemingly applies across the board. They compare it to Gezel, and in comparing it to Gezel, they compare all of Nezek to Gezel, and therefore they see no differentiation. On the other hand, the Shulchan Aruch, when he codifies this, brings it only with regards to Chovel. And therefore you could see that the Shulchan Aruch, in all likelihood, views Adama Mazik as being something that involves an Isur with it, versus Mamona Mazik, which may not incorporate an Isur in it, because of, by definition, there is a lack of direct connection to the owner in that manner. But Rabbi Rav Rosenzweig wanted to suggest that maybe you could argue that the Isser exists in both places, which is that there is an Isser by Adam Mazik by Chuvel. There's also an Isser by Nizke Mamon. But the emphasis or the primary side might be different in each of these aspects, which is that by Adam Mazik, the primary problem is the Isser. The person did something wrong. The reparations, the restitution, is because they did something wrong. Now we have to deal with the activity or the thing that they did wrong. But the primary guide or the primary issue here is the mazik. On the other hand, when we look at Nizke Mamon, it might be the other way around, which is that the primary issue is the nezek and the restitution, the reparations. The isur is dragged along because you did something to another party, and that activity or that action towards the other party is now kalul with it. Included in it is a nisur. And the difference between them might be a nafkamina as to whether, first of all, someone is chayav, like a katan. Is a katan chayav for damage that they do? If the primary focus is on the isur, tanim are turim, mikol mitzvot haTorah, from isurim, from mamon. But if you say that the primary aspect is reparations to make whole and to repair the damage that was done, maybe even by a katan, that obligation exists to repay or to repair the damage that was done, because the Isser only comes along as a sidebar, but the primary aspect is the reparations, and therefore the katan should be chayav, even though maybe he can't pay now until he's older, maybe he should be chayav for that restitution. Other nafkaminot might be in the case of whether we're onshin min adin. There is a principle in the Torah, ain onshin min adin, which means that we do not punish through a kal v'chomer or through a logical argument. So therefore, it would depend on how you view nizakim. Is nizakim an issue of mamon, or is it nizakim an issue of isur? The Balei Tosafot on today's daf will say that it's nizkei mamon and onshin min adin, because it all focuses on monetary matters, where you can use logic in order to penalize or to say someone is chayav. The other hand, the Rashbo writes that ain onshin min adin by nizakim, because it's an issue of isur. And since it's an issue of isur, you can't use the normal principles of mamon to apply here, because you're in violation of an isur. And within that, you would also have to ask, what would you do in a case of safek? If it's a safek mamon, then we say, motzi mechavero alav araya. The burner of proof is on the one who's trying to extract the money. The other hand, if you say it's a safek isura, then a safek isura is the chumra. And that's exactly what the Rashba says, that because nizikin, sveka didu, have a ki isurim, and therefore goes the chumra. The brach brings up another issue, which would also be a nafkamina, is whether a person who does nezek is pasul le'edut. Well, if it's just simply a monetary matter where he has to make reparations or restitution, then it would be hard to argue that he is pasul le'edut. On the other hand, if he is in violation of Isur, especially if he's in violation of the Isur of Lo Tigzol, which is the primary area where the Torah is posel someone le'edut, then you can understand why the Bach says that a person is pasul le'edut when he violates the Isur of Nezek. On the other hand, the Yamshel Shlomo argues on that position of the Bach and says that a person who does damage is not pasul le'edut. And obviously he is emphasizing the monetary side and not the isur side of the damage. That also might have nafkaminot in terms of when you are chayav. Things like onus. When we say that Adam is muad olam, does that even apply to onus? Does that apply to things that where it was done under duress or something that was completely out of control of the individual? Do we say that Adam is muad olam? Tosafot over there says, in the case of onus, you're patur. The Rambam says you are chayav. That machloket might revolve around whether you're in violation of just simply nezek, damage, or you're in violation of an isur. So onis is a poter when it comes to isur. It may not be a poter when it comes to mamon. Or you could view or you could play around with, depending on what the isur is, whether you would be chayav and patur in cases of onis. So here it just gives you a flavor for the issues of nezek. We'll bump into them, I'll point them out as we go through the Masechta. Again, we'll see one of them today. But whether it's Isur or Mamon, has implications. One of those implications, and that's what the Rashba says when he says that Nizakim are different, is the fact that until now, we've learned Masechtot where, when we had a doubt, we went to Chumrah. Whenever we had something we didn't know, you go to Chumrah. The difference in Nizikin is that you can't do that anymore. Because in Nizikin, there are always two parties involved. And if you're a Goleich Lamach, the Chumrah, that means that there's a party on the other side that it turns out to be a Kula for. And so therefore, in Nizakin, you can't simply just say L'chumra. You have to deal with both sides and come to a proper conclusion, because any benefit you give to one party is at the cost or the detriment of another party. And therefore, in a sense, entering the world of Nizakin is different and much different than all the starim that we've seen until now, because of that key difference between monetary matters and the matters of Isurim that we have dealt with until now. Just as the last part of this introduction, but I will deal with it much more extensively when we get further on in the Masechta, that you have to think about the whole Masechet Baba Kama and what the Chachamim do here is trying to take everyday items that people need and are a necessity, and then put a framework around them that allows it to be utilized, functional, but also protect society at large. The best way to think of that is a car, which is that a car can do damage, a car can kill, but a car is also a necessity for people to transport themselves to get from place to place. So if we say nobody can go in a car because a car could do damage, a car could kill, then the detriment to society is so great that we don't want to say that. On the other hand, we don't want people just driving willy-nilly, acting and behaving in irresponsible manners when they drive their car. And so there are rules about how to deal with that. So putting a framework around a vehicle, here literally a vehicle, that has the potential to do damage, but has huge utility to society, how do we deal with those items? So today it's the car, and their day it was the shor, and we'll see other things that the Mishnayot speak about. Again, as we get further on the Masechta, I'll speak about this much more extensively, but you also have to keep that in mind in the back of your head whenever we're speaking about Baba Kama, to think about it in the modern terms versus you're just talking about animals and boar and shor. You have to bring it up to date so that you understand what the challenge that the Chachamim were dealing with in terms of the Mishnayot here. So now here we begin with the Mishnah on Daf Bet Amud Aleph. Arba'a Avot Nizikin. There are four avot, means primary, principal categories of nezek. Why they are called nezikin is already mentioned by some of the Rishonim and Achronim, because they should really be mazikim. So just to give a little flavor for how they speak about this, we're not going to go into all the answers for this, but if you say something is a mazik, it means that it's inherently something that does damage all the time. It's clear that we're not talking about that when we're dealing with these issues in Baba Kama. We're dealing with items or ownership, possessions that have utility, but they also, with that utility, can cause damage. And so that's why maybe the word nizikin is used over here, is because they turn, or they can become a mazik, but they're not inherently a mazik. So they start out as nizikin, it's a neutral word, that have the potential to do damage, but by the end of the Mishnah, you'll see that they're already mazikin because they did do damage. Others speak about the fact that this is a derech hadrush. I think Tosfot Yom Tov says something like this, that it's a combination of both the mazik and nizak, meaning that also of the nifal, because they hear the person who does damage is also the victim, or meaning they are also damaged by the damage that they do because of the isurim and the monies that they're going to have to pay. So, arba avot nizikin, ashor, vabor, vamave, vahever. So here the Mishnah lays out, there are two things that are obvious here, which is habor, usually refers to a cistern, but some sort of pit that damages the Rishut Rabim. Hever is esh. The two that are unclear here are shor and maveh, which will result in a machlok between Rav and Shmuel and the Gemara as to how to find them. Whether shor means all the damage that a shor can do, which we'll see on today, the remainder of today's daf, Karen, Shane, and Regel, which are all the different ways to damage. Maveh is Adam. That's one possibility. The other possibility is, according to Shmuel, to say shor here refers to the hezek, or the normal hezek of shor of regel, and that a maveh is shein. Now your question, how do you get to the order in this Mishnah? Where's Adam HaMazik? Where is the order of the Mishnah that it gives you the arba avot nizikin? So Rashi right away says that it is keseder sheim tuvim b'parsha sidrana Mishnah. The way that they're laid out in Parshat Mishpatim is what is determinant in the order here in the Mishnah. So if you look in Parshat Mishpatim, depending on which position you take, and that's part of the problem here, whether it's Rav or Shmuel, then it will make a difference as to whether this is right. But in the Parshiot of Shmot, it speaks about there, Vi gach shor et isha, so you have negicha keren of the shor, vichi tach ish bor, person opens up a bor, then again you have vichi gof shor, then you have ki gnov ish shor aseh, and then you go on, ki yaver ish sadeh ocher mishtilach et biro bibir b'steh acher. So those are different types of damage that can take place. Rashi claims that the order follows the Parshiot Torah. Tosafot already points out that it depends on which opinion you are subscribing to as to whether that works. Even though according to Shmuel, who says that shor here means regel, it's not in the order of the Parsha. The regel nafla mishilachet biro, dechtiv batar bor, which is after bor. Mirkomakom shem shor tiv kodem b'parsha. The issue of shor is raised very early on in the Parsha, and therefore, even though we're not talking about that particular nezek of shor, nevertheless, shem shor, the category of shor, karen, is mentioned earlier, and so therefore it goes earlier in the Mishnah. L'manda mar maveh ze adam. According to one who says maveh ze adam, afgal debater habarak tif. With regards to Rav, who says that maveh is adam, then that's out of order, because adam is only mentioned after havara. Nezek Adam is found in Parshat Emor, which is way after the issue of Eish. Lochash lishnoto k'seder parsha l'fisher v'chol kolkach. Didn't want to deal with that because since that's so far removed from Parshat Mishpatim, shano k'seder lo harei. And therefore it follows the order of the Mishnah, which we're going to see in a second. The second half of the Mishnah has an order to it, and that second half governs what the order was in the first half, even though it doesn't work out to be exactly like it is, or the way that it's laid out in the Parshiot HaTorah. Rabbeinu Tam Perish, the Shem Adam Ktiv B'Parsha. Rabbeinu Tam gives an alternate answer, which is that Shem Adam is mentioned in the Parsha before Havara, which is Ki Ignov. Even though it's not speaking about damage, but it's talking about Adam doing the wrong thing, and therefore, just like we say Shem Shor is written earlier, we'll say the same thing by Shem Adam, that it's written earlier. So in putting the order of the Avot Nezikin here, the Rashi claims it's the order of the Parshiot. The Rabbeinu Tam makes an alternate suggestion as to the order of the Mishnah, which is that the order of the Mishnah has to do with the commonness of the damage that is being done, which is how frequent or how shchiach is this damage. And the Mishnah goes from the most shchiach, the most common damage, to the least shchiach, the less likely or most unlikely form of damage, and that's what the order of shor, bor, maveh, and hever is. The Rashbam, on the other hand, gives the reason, which is much more balabatish, but probably is the real reason for the order in the Mishnah, which is that it rhymes. Shor, bor, maveh, hever. Remember, when you're learning these things by heart, that it makes a big difference. It's much easier to remember. Shor, bor, maveh, hever. The Rashbam says such a thing. Very simplistic in nature, but in the end is probably the real explanation for the order of the Mishnah because of the necessity to learn it Baal Peh. The Mishnah now says Lo Harei. As Tosafot points out, this is different than any other Lo Harei in the Shas. Every other Lo Harei in Shas comes to teach you or tell you what's the Chumrah of this one versus that one. Ein Perusho Kashar Mikamot. This stringency is not like the stringency of the other one. Unlike the other places in Shas where it's highlighting the chumrah that each item has that we're going to ignore because we're going to find a common denominator between them. And this is what's distinct about the item. In our Mishnah, it's because it mentions the most stringent first because the Mishnah is trying to demonstrate that you wouldn't be able to learn one from the other. And therefore, it's not saying don't pay heed to the Chumrah, but rather, this Chumrah causes us to have another category in order to subsume within the world of Nezek all the different manifestations, because this in of itself would not have sufficed. And saying to you, here, these items have this chumrah in common, or this item is more chamur, and therefore I couldn't learn the other item from it. And it's doing it in a progressive manner, where it's bringing you the thing that has the highest stringency first, and then slowly working its way down to the item that has the greatest leniencies associated with it. You can't learn one from the other, which is, lore is shor, kareya maveh. The shor is not like the maveh, whatever the maveh is over here, whether it's chain, whether it's adama mazik, velore maveh kareya shor. And the same is true the other way around, that maveh is not like the shor. Velo zeh vizeh, sheish ben ruach chayim kareya ish. Now, the Mishnah never tells you, what does it mean that the maveh is not like the shor, or the shor is like the maveh? And Tosfot takes time to go and speak about all these things. How come the Mishnah doesn't discuss the difference between each one of these items? For some of them he says it wouldn't be possible, that it's actually not possible to differentiate. And some of them he just simply says that it's obvious, that when you have one versus one, you can always figure out what the differences are between Maveh and Shor, between Adam and Shor, whether it's Keren and Regel. You can differentiate between them and you can understand it. But once you combine and say, I have two items, to find the common denominator between them, that's harder. The other possibility is because the words Shor and Maveh are not well defined in the Mishnah doesn't then take one by one each of these items and compare them because of the uncertainty surrounding the definition of those words. Or, as Tosafot points out, for some of these items, it's not obvious why there would be a difference between them, that in essence they are on par in many ways, and therefore the Mishnah can't draw a distinction between each item singly and another item, because those differences don't exist. Which is not true when you already bundle some of them together, there you could find a chumrah that would differentiate them from another form of nezek. And that's where the Mishnah begins to speak up and say, had I had two items, that wouldn't have been sufficient. And that's what the Mishnah does here. It says, "Velo zeh v'zeh, the mav'eh, and the shor, sheish ben ruach chayim karei ha'ish." They are both animate objects versus ish, which is an inanimate object. And therefore, if you were to see, whether you say maveh is adam and shor refers to all the nizke shor, whether shor and maveh are two different types of nizke shor, in both cases you're talking about a live animal or a live being, which is animate, versus ish, shein bo ruach chayim. So I couldn't learn from those two to ish. Velo zeh v'zeh shedarkan leilech ulahazik. And all of these items share a common denominator, which is shor, maveh, and hever, share a common denominator, which is that they go out and do damage. They take the damage to the victim or to the item that is being damaged because they go there. The adama mazik, the shor, or the esh travels to do the damage. Kari abor, shein darko leilech lazik, versus the cistern of the boar, which is stationary, and the victim comes to the nezek. The nezek stays in place, and the nezek is done to someone who meets up with the nezek, rather than the nezek traveling to do the damage. So all of these items make them differentiated. In that manner that they're differentiated, you couldn't learn one from the other, or even if you had a combination of all of them, you wouldn't be able to learn them. The Gemara later on will say that if you just took boar and one of the other items, that would have been sufficient. Because if you take boar, which has this lowest common denominator, or the fact that it's inanimate, and it doesn't move, the victims come to it, and you take one of the other items, between the two of them, you could have learnt the other nizikin, and that the Gemara will discuss later. Hatzada shaveh shaben, what is the common denominator between all four of these items? Shedarkan lazik, that they have a propensity towards doing damage. Ushmiratan alecha, and you are responsible for ensuring that they don't do damage. Uka shehezik, once they do a damage, Chav ha-mazik. Then the damager is obligated, l'shalem tashlumei nezek, to make restitution, repayment of the loss that was engendered by this mazik. You can see here the Mishnah now uses the word mazik. Once they've done damage, they become a mazik. B'meitav aretz. This addition at the end of the Mishnah, which will come up here and later on in the Masechta, is that one can make restitution or payment either in cash, or any fungible item that is equivalent to cash. So you can use cash and cash equivalents. So that is true by any item. The one item where you might have a problem is real estate, because real estate is not a liquid asset. And so what the Mishnah tells you is that if you're going to make payment with real estate, you have to give Meitav Aretz. You have to give the best property, what is otherwise known in the parlance of the Gemara as Idit, which is the primary, we saw that in the Gemara in Ketubot, the best of the property, because that is the most fungible of real estate assets. So if we're going to allow you to use real estate as a means of payment, that payment has to be done with the most fungible of assets. All right, so that's the Mishnah. Now Gemara asks the first question out of the box. Migtani Avot, Michlau Deika Toladot. By definition, if the Mishnah begins with Avot, which are primary categories, that must mean that there are subcategories. There must be Toladot. Now the Gemara asks, Todotem Kiyotzeben? Olav Kiyotzeben. When we talk about these subcategories, are the subcategories like the primary categories? Or are they different than the primary categories? And the Gemara now will go on to demonstrate that there are different types of models that we see. One model from Shabbat and one model from Tumah. So is it Todotem Kiyotzeben Gabe Shabbat Nan? By Shabbat, we have the Mishnah that says, Avot Melachot Arbaim Chaser Achat, that you have 40 minus 1, 39 primary categories of Melacha that can be done on Shabbat, that if you do them, B'mezid Yid B'chayav Skila Karet, and if you do it B'shogeg Yid B'chayav Echatat. Avot, Michlal De'ika Toladot. If you have primary categories, there must be subcategories. Todotehem, Keyotze Behen. There by Shabbat, it's clear that the Toladot, the subcategories, look exactly like the primary categories. Loshna Av, Chatat. Loshna Tolada, Chatat. Doesn't matter whether you violate the Av. The primary category, you'll have to bring a Chatat if you do a B'shogeg. If you violate the subcategory, you'd also have to bring a Chatat if you violate a B'shogeg. Loshna Av Skila. If you do it B'mezid, the Av results in Skila. If you do the primary category. Loshna Toladah. If you violate the subcategory, you also get Skila if you do it B'mezid. Umayika ben Av l'Toladah. Well then, if there's no difference between the primary and subcategory, then please explain to me why one is called an Av and one is called a Toladah. Nafkamina. There is a Nafkamina between them. Dilu Avid Shte Avot Ba'adei Agadi. If one does two avot, meaning two primary categories of melacha, inami, shtei toladot v'hadei adodi, or you do two subcategories together, mechayei v'kol chada v'chada, you are obligated, you are enjoined to bring a chatat for each violation. So if you do two separate primary categories or two separate subcategories, for each one of them, you're going to have to bring a korban chatat, or if you do it b'mezid, technically, to skilot, but that has no nafkamina because you can only kill a person once. Vi avid avu tolada didei. But if you do a primary category and a subcategory within that one primary category, lo mechayev elachado. There you can only bring one chatat. Because the essence, the violation of the primary category, and then the violation of the subcategory is really a violation of the primary category again. So because of that, you only chayav one chatat. So that's the difference between an Av and a Toladah. An Av sets the category. So if you violate something within the category, you're Chayav. But if you violate the Av in a subcategory within the primary category, then in essence, you've only violated the same Av twice or within the same Shogeg, and therefore you only Chayav one Chatat. So that's the difference between an Av and a Toladah. So even though, in essence, an Av and a Toladah are exactly the same and you're culpable for both of them at the same level, there is this one nafkamina if you did them together. Ole Rabbi Eliezer de Mechayev HaToladah B'Mokom Av. We have a problem because of the Shita de Rabbi Eliezer who says that even if you do a Toladah, a subcategory of that primary category, you're still Chayav two Chatot. It doesn't get subsumed under the Av in this case. Amai Kari Le'Av. V'Amai Kari Le'Toladah. Then why is it called an Av and a Toladah? Tosafot over here already asks, Vim Tomar, Nafkamina, Le'inyan Hatra. What about warning? A person, when they're doing a violation, there is a Nafkamina. So Tzarich La'atrota Toldah Mishum Avdida. Because you have to warn for the Toladah because of the Av. Which is in Shabbat, the Gemara in Shabbat, when it talks about violations, it says Mishamer. Mishum Maimatrin Bey. When you do or violate the subcategory of Mishamer, what have you done? Rabba Amar Mishum Borer. It's a problem of Borer. Rabbi Zerama Mishum Rakeid. These are different types of separating Melachot. And they want to know, what is the primary category that you violated? So from the Gemara and Shabbat, it sounds like that if you want to warn somebody when they violated Toledah, you need to know that what's there, the subcategory of the Av, and you must warn them based on that Av Melacha. And that will be a big nafkamina between an Av and a Toledah. An Av, you warn the person, don't do this Melacha. When you go to the subcategory, you don't warn them about the subcategory, you warn them about the Av, the primary category. So that is a nafkamina between them, based on the Gemara and Shabbat. So then, why over here do we not say that that's the case? So Tosafot has two answers to that question, how to reconcile what seemingly in the Gemara Bava Kama says there's no difference between an Av and Toledah, and the Gemara and Shabbat, which indicates there is a difference in terms of Atra. So the first answer he gives, V'ish lamar da'achi parich, v'shumayim matrinim be shehu chayav. So that the question in the Gemara in Shabbat is not about which Av, but rather, what can you give a warning for and he will still be chayav? Which means that you could warn him for the toledah. It just means that if you also, or if you so choose to give the warning through the Av, which Av is it that you would pick? Because if you pick the wrong Av malacha, then he would not be chayav. That's not to say you can't warn him for the toledah. You can. But if you want also, or if you do, by accident, you give him the warning through the Av, you need to get the right Av. Otherwise, he's going to think you're making fun of him. When you mention, if a guy's going to write and do the Av malacha of Kotev, you can't say to him, man, don't weave on Shabbat. It's not meaningful in that case, because you're warning him for the wrong thing. So the same thing with a toledah. If you warn him for the wrong primary category, then you're not warning him in essence. So that's the nature of the question of the Gemara there. And Tosafot believes in this first answer. You can warn for a toledah, just like you can warn for an Av. The only question in that Gemara and Shabbat is, don't take that literally. It's not asking you which Av you have to give a warning for. It's saying, if you give a warning for an Av, it has to match up with that toledah, and which Av matches with this toledah. The second answer he gives is, that's the answer of the Gemara. The next answer of the Gemara actually addresses this, and therefore the Gemara, in essence, asks this question and then gives the answer through this next line, which is, the Gemara says, Hach davi mishkan chashiva kari le'av. Hach davi mishkan chashiva kari le'toda. This is a Gemara that appears in the Gemara in Shabbat. Over there, we have the same problem in terms of the girsa. Tosafot over here raises the girsa. First of all, we'll read it the way that it's written in our Gemara, which is, Hachtav Mishkan, that which is found in the Mishkan, is chashiva, is considered to be chashuv. So you want to know what's an Av and what's a Toledah. If it's in the Mishkan, by definition, it's chashuv, and therefore it is an Av Melacha. On the other hand, the other girsa that Tosafot mentions over here was that there's a Vav here. And it says, Hachtav Mishkan v'chashiva kari le'av. That which was found in the Mishkan is also chashuv, is called an Av. The nafkamina between them is if you have malacha in the Mishkan, that's not chashuv. So in the case when you read anything in the Mishkan is chashuv, then it would be an Av by definition because it's found in the Mishkan. So then, according to the second Lashon, if it was in the Mishkan, but it wasn't significant, then it would not be an Av. But in essence, according to the first answer in Tosafot that we just saw before about Hatra'ah, the difference here is simply a descriptive difference between an Av and a Toledah. An Av is something that was found in the Mishkan. A Toledah is something that's not found in the Mishkan. In terms of normative differences between them, there are none. An Av and a Toledah look exactly alike. And that's the answer of the Gemara according to the first answer in Tosafot. According to the second answer in Tosafot, that's what the Gemara answers here. Rav Yehi Shamar, Duzeru Shemir Tareitz, Hachtav Mishkan Karli Av, V'tzarich La'atro to Toledah Bishma. That the second way that Tosafot answers is that's the answer of the Gemara here. That ain't ochanami. When you have a toledah, you have to warn for the Av. And that's what the Gemara is answering over here. What's the difference between a toledah and a Av? That which is found in the Mishkan is an Av. And since it was found in the Mishkan, that's what you have to give the warning for. And therefore, according to the second answer in Tosafot, there is a normative difference between Av and toledah, which is that a toledah, you will have to warn based on the primary category and not the violation that is done. Whereas an Av, of course, you would have to warn for the Av because it is the primary category. And that's how he reconciles between this and the Gemara and Shabbat by saying that our Gemara is actually making that differentiation. So based on the two answers in Tosafot about Hatra'ah, will make a difference as to how you read this piece of the Gemara, as to whether this is simply descriptive in nature, telling you why it's called an Av, why it's a Toledah with no nafkamina l'alacha, or whether there really is a nafkamina l'alacha in the end about Hatra'ah. The Gemara now brings another example of avot and toledot, which is gabei tumot tnan. In the beginning of Masechet Kelim, which is the beginning of Taharot, it says over there, avot hatumot. These are the primary categories of tumah, which are otherwise known as av hatumah. There is the sheretz, right, the creepy crawly things, eight shretzim in the Torah, shichvat zera, semen, vitamei mate, someone who came into contact with a mate. All of those are avot hatumah. Well, if something is an avatumah, then there must be a toladai derivative of this. Todotehem lav kiyotzeben. So here again, the Gemara says that it's clear that by tumah, their derivatives or their subcategories are not exactly like the avot. Dilo av metamei adam v'kelim. An avatumah has the ability to be metamei another person or a utensil, because an avatumah makes a rishon tumah, and a kli or an adam can become a rishon tumah. On the other hand, vilu toladot, if something that came into contact with the tamei mate, who is a rishon tumah, then ochlim mashkim tamei, he can cause tumah to be passed on to food items and liquids, because he's a rishon that will pass to a sheni. Aval adam v'kelim lo mitamei. Adam, a person and utensils, you will not be able to mitamei, because a person cannot become a sheni the tumah. So there you see, toldotehem, lav kiyotzebem. By tumah, it's clear that the toldot are very different than the avot. By definition, it's that way because you drop a category when you pass on tumah. So if you start with avat tumah, the next category is a rishon l'tumah. A rishon l'tumah is not as effective as passing on tumah as an avat tumah. And therefore, toldotehem, lav kiyotzebem. The Rabbeinu Tam here asked the famous question, is that really true? We find places by tumah where tumah does not drop a level. And that is the principle of cherev harihu kechalal, that a metal object that comes into contact with a mate has the same status as a mate. Now, that is definitely true when it comes into contact with the mate itself. A mate is an avi avot tumah. If a cherev metal comes into contact with them, then it is also avi avot tumah. It remains on the same level as the mate themselves, but it also might apply to an avat tumah, which is something that is an avat tumah that comes into contact with the metal, cherev hu kechalal. That metal will remain an av tumah. So you see there are places within tumah where the levels remain flat. The tumah gets passed, and in the tumah being passed, it stays at the same level as the object conveying the tumah. So there it's todotehem, kiyotze behem. So the Rabbeinu Tam answers in a technical way and says that they're actually different. Because a mate can create a cherev, which means that a sword that comes into contact with the mate, it will have the same level as a mate. But now, if another sword comes into contact with that metal, the first sword, it will not have the same level, it will drop a level. So you see, there is a difference. The primary category, the Av, can make something exactly like itself. This next one, where it's, even though it replicated itself and made the Tumah like itself, that cannot recreate the Tumah at the same level, it will drop a level. So there is a difference between the primary category and the subcategory. That's the way the Rabbeinu Tam answers. Others, I think the Shita Mekubetz, it brings down that it's an exception to the rule. Come on. 90% or 95% of tumah works in this way. You found me one exception to the rule, you're not going to call it tododem kiyotzeben. It's still tododem lav kiyotzeben. So now what Rashi says, and this is what you were asking before, we have two paradigms. We have Shabbat, which says tododem kiyotzeben, and then we have tumah, which is tododem lav kiyotzeben. Where does Nezek fit in? Is Nezek like Shabbat, where the avot and toledot are going to be identical? Or is the nezek like tumah, where the toledot are going to be different than the avot? Now, that's the way that Rashi explains it. The Rif, on the other hand, has a hard time with that explanation for good reason, which is that by nezek, it seems obvious that nezek is much more like Shabbat than it is like tumah. Why would you believe that there's a drop down in nezek between an av and a toledah? The whole point, or the whole nature of nezek, is that you do damage, you have to make reparation for it. So why should it matter if it's the av or the toledah? You have to make reparations. Why should there be any difference between the toledah and the av? It seems almost obvious that it would be like Shabbat and not like tumah. And so therefore, what's the Gemara's question? So the Rif learns the nature of the question slightly differently, which is, we know by nezek, we already have a paradigm of differential between, we'll call it an av and a toledah, even though that's not exactly what it's like, is by keren. By keren, where a shore does damage through goring, there is a tam and a muad. And the Torah tells us if he's a tam, someone that hasn't done this on a recurring basis, you pay chatzi nezek. On the other hand, when it comes to a muad, where he's already on a recurring basis done this, then we said that the person is responsible for the full damage that is done by the keren. So what the Rif says is, you see here, that there is a difference between tam and muad, or a difference between sometimes you pay nezek shalem, and sometimes you pay chatzi nezek. And therefore, the Rif wants to use that as the extrapolation, which is, maybe there's a chiluk between av and tolada, the same way that there's a difference between a tam and a muad. So not in the general sense of av and tolada, like we're looking at, like Rashi says, between Shabbat and Tumah, but maybe because within the world of Nezek, we see there's something called Chatzi Nezek, and there's something called Nezek Shalem. So maybe that differential comes about because of the difference between av and tolada. And maybe that a tolada is only Chatzi Nezek, and av is Nezek Shalem, or something along those lines. But we find a paradigm within Nezek to show that there are differentiations. And because of that differentiation, that's the nature of the Gemara's question here, rather than asking a much more basic question like Rashi says, which seemingly the answer to which is obvious. Of course, it's like Shabbat and not like Tumah. So that's why the Rif might word it slightly differently in order to capture a reason as to why the Gemara might think it's like Tumah. Not like exactly like Tumah, that it drops down a category, but rather, within the world of Nezek, we find differentiation. Nezek Shalem and Chatzi Nezek. Maybe that differentiation also has application or is meaningful in the worlds of Av and Tolada with regards to Nezek. So Gemara says, Hachamai, what's the din here by Nezek? Amar Papa, Yeshman Ki Yotzeben? Yeshman Lav Ki Yotzeben. So Rav Papa says, you know what? Both are right. Some types of Toladot, some subcategories are just like the Avot. And some subcategories are different than the Avot. And that's what the Gemara is going to spend the next couple of Dapim dealing with, is this statement of Rav Papa. What exactly did Rav Papa mean? So the Gemara then is going to have to first take a step back and explain to us what the Avot are, what are the Toladot, and then in each case it's going to test, is the Tolada like the Av, or is the Tolada different than the Av, in order to try to find or seeking this place where Rav Papa says that the Toladot are not like the Avot. Again, the more natural way to view it, like we said before, by Shabbat is to say that the connection is between the Tolada is exactly like the Av, and that's what's going to be the natural outcome in most of these cases. So in essence, we're really searching for the one case where it's not like the Av, that's where Rashi is going to be. Or for the Rif, it means we're looking for the place where there's Chatzi Nezek. We're looking for the place where you'd only pay half and not pay a whole, which would be an indication of the fact that it's a Tolada, not an Av. All right, so now, look at where it says, Tarabanan. Gimel Avot Nemru B'Shor. There are three Avot, or three major categories of damage that can be done by a Shor. Here, the Gemara is not defining the word Shor in our Mishnah. That's subject to a Machloka later on. It's just saying, within this category, or the animal Shor, the Shor has three primary ways in which you can do damage. So, Keren, Vashein, Varegel. The primary methods of damage that a Shor can do is either through goring, with its horns. It can do eating, biting with its teeth. And regel, it could do, we'll see, kicking, walking, trampling. We'll see the differences between them, but it could do damage that way. Keren minalan. How do we know that Keren is a vehicle for damage or an av damage? Because in Mishpatim it says, ki gach shor et ish o et isha. And then we have later on, ki gof shor et ish et shor re'ehu. So here you have a verb that is used to describe the damage done by the shor. One is igach, and one is igof. And the Gemara here wants to know, kerami nalan to tarabanan. Ki igach, it says in the parshia, ki igach, en nigicha elebekeren. Nigicha, the verb igach means that you're doing damage with the horn. How do I know that? Shenemar, because it says in the pasuk in Malachim Aleph, fayaslo tzidkia ben knana, karnei barzel, so here in the Mashal, there's a story there. Achab and Yoshaphat are sitting before Achab goes out to his final battle with Aram, in which he's going to be killed. And over there, the Nevi'ei Sheker, one of which is Tzidkiah ben Knana, does this whole demonstration saying that you're going to be successful in the battle. And the way that he does is he takes out a horn, a metallic horn, and he puts it on his head and he says, there's like the Karen of the shore that is Nogeach, so too you will be Nogeach, you will gore Aram. Yoshaphat then says to, Yoshaphat over there says to Achav, don't you have any real Nevi'im over there? Don't you have any Nevi'ei Emet? And then he brings in Michayahu ben Imla, who tells the real truth of what's going to happen, that Ahab is not going to make it through this battle. But in that conversation, Tzidkiah ben Kenana does this whole demonstration to show that he is definitely right. And there it uses the word keren and the verb negach. So that means the definition of yigach means it's done with a keren. Ve'omer, and we have another example of that, b'chor shoro hadar lo. So this is in the bracha to Yosef, in Zot HaBracha. B'chor shoro hadar lo, v'karnei re'im karnav. So it has the power of the shore, but the glory or the horns of the re'im. Again, over there, behem amim yinagach. With them, he will gore other nations. So you see the word karen, again, used with the verb nagach. My v'omer, why does that have to bring you to psukim? B'chi teima, if you want to say divrei Torah mi divrei Kabbalah lo yafinan, we can't learn out something in the Torah from divrei Kabbalah. Rashi over here says the definition of divrei Kabbalah means nevi'im v'ktuvim, which is interesting because in Chas, in different places, divrei Kabbalah can be used to refer to ktuvim or nevi'im or both. Here he says it's referring to both. That Divrei Torah, you can't learn out of Divrei Kabbalah. You can't learn that which is found in the Torah from Divrei Kabbalah. The reason being, because the Torah is the final say on all halachot. A Navi or the Nevi'im are not allowed to be mechadesh, any new halachot. And so therefore, when you come to the Navi can't be telling you information that you don't know from the Torah. Because otherwise then he is being mechadesh. He's bringing in a new halacha, and we know in Sefer Devarim that the Navi is a Navi Sheker if he brings a new halacha, if he disagrees with the Torah. You would have thought, maybe I have this pasuk in Navi, which is great. Maybe you don't want to learn out of the Navi, so I'm going to bring you a pasuk from the Torah. But then you have to ask, why did I bring the pasuk from the Navi at all? Now, just in terms of why Navi is called Divrei Kabbalah, the Tosfot Rabbeinu Peretz over here brings two reasons as to why the Navi is called Divrei Kabbalah. Either because the Nevi'im are kovlim, that they complain and they warn the people about what their misdeeds are or what they are doing wrong, and therefore it's called Divrei Kabbalah. Or the other one is that Yesh Mefarshim Kabbalah Shukulam Kiblu Nevuatam Mimoshe Rabbeinu B'Sinai, that their Nevuah stems from the people's request at Har Sinai to have an intermediary between them and God. And so all Nevuah really stems from the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu was a Navi at Har Sinai. So if one of those two reasons, they are called Divrei Kabbalah. So the Gemara says, okay, now I understand why you brought me a Pasuk from the Torah, because the Pasuk in Navi may not suffice, because we don't want to learn out of Divrei Kabbalah. So then, Tashma. So then it says, B'chor Shero Adar Lo. That's why we brought the Pasuk from the Torah. Va Meilafo. Gemara says, wait a minute. This isn't the real Limud. Giloi Milta Be'al Mahu. When you're bringing the Pasuk from Navi, you're not trying to bring us a new halacha. You're not trying to tell us a new something that we didn't know before. You're simply trying to define a word. And so you go to the Navi and say, how is the word used in Navi? That must be the way that it was used in the Torah. That's what we call Giloi Milta. It's as if you looked up the word in the dictionary and you got the definition of the word. That you can go to the Navi for. That you can go to the Ketuvim for to figure out the meaning of a word. Here we want to know what the verb nagach means. So the verb nagach means to gore. How do we know that? Because I have examples of that in the Navi. That's perfectly fine to do. Why did you reject the pasuk from Navi if you're not learning halacha, but you're certainly learning a definition? Because Gilei Milta, the negicha bekarenu, to tell us that the verb negicha means to use a karen. Elamahu de tema. So what I would have thought. Ki palig rachmanu ben tam lemuad. What I would have thought, if I only had that pasuk in Navi, is that when the Torah differentiates between a tam, a calm, domesticated animal that does not gore on a regular basis, versus a mu'ad, which is either an animal that always damages, or an animal who was once domesticated, but now has had a recurring bouts of doing damage, and now is considered to be a mu'ad, designated or wild for this item. Hani milei bitlusha. That distinction is only true when the karen is separated from the animal. Aval b'mechuberet, ema kula mu'edeti. But when it's attached, then I would think it was all mu'ad. So let's think about the example brought from Navi. The example brought from the Navi is Tzidkiah ben Kenana. Tzidkiah Kenana obviously doesn't have a keren, a horn, attached to him. So when he's telling a horn, he's talking about a detached horn. So you would think that when do we make a distinction between tam and mu'ad, means unusual behavior of a shor, and that's why you only have to pay chatzin ezek.
versus something that is normal behavior of the shor. That's only when the shor takes his horn and sticks it in his mouth. And then he goes and does damage with it. Why? Because that's unusual. That's tlusha. But if he has on his head horns, and he gores with those horns, you know why he has horns on his head? To gore with. That's what he's doing. He's doing what's normal for that behavior. Maybe that would be mu'ad bi'olam. And so if I only had the pasuk in Navi, I would have said that tam and mu'ad, that distinction only applies when he does something outrageous. Or something that is not normal. Which is that he took the karen in his mouth, or he did something with it, and he did damage with it. But if it's attached to his head, that's the normal behavior of a shor, and that would be mu'ad from day one. So that's why I bring the pasuk, tashma, b'chor shor hadar lo. That's why I bring the pasuk from the Torah that says that the attached horn is also considered to be tam and mu'ad, or the attached horn also has the meaning of negicha. So that the word negicha can apply both to a detached horn and can apply to an attached horn. That it means both of these. The whole idea of Karen, by the way, is it's unusual. That's why you pay Chatzi Nezek. How unusual does it have to be? How crazy does this circumstance have to be? Does that mean that he did something so crazy that would not be normal? Or is it something that even though it's normal behavior, it's just not the common behavior of the animal? What did he do three times in order to be held culpable? He took a Karen in his mouth and he damaged with it three times. So that's why now you got to worry about him doing this on a regular basis. Or did he take his head and butt somebody with his head three times, which is not a common behavior? The question of the Gemara is, what type of unusual behavior are we deeming to be a tam that you don't have to pay chatzi nezek for? How unusual does that have behavior have to be? Does it have to be as far-fetched as a Karen tlusha? Or is even a Karen mechuberet still considered to be unusual because the shor will not gore unless provoked or in a difficult situation or an unusual circumstance? That's what the Gemara is trying to clarify. The psukim help you to understand that. What is Karen tlusha? What is Karen mechuberet? And both of them, in the end, is what the Gemara is saying, are considered to be Karen. And so both of them will be subject to the principles of Tam and Muad. Right now, the Gemara asks, obvious question, Tolda. Meaning that the Gemara here interrupts the Braita in order to, as Tosfot points out, if Sikha Braita is the Feresh Tolda Teyem, Lav Ki Yotzeben. The Gemara stops the Braita in the middle to try to go then search for the Toladot of these Avot. And then in searching for those Toladot to figure out whether it's Ki Yotzeben or Lav Ki Yotzeben, what was Rav Papa referring to? But we brought one line of the Braita, a couple lines of the Braita, and then the Gemara stops, and then we'll go back to the Braita at a later point to finish off the other items that are mentioned in the Braita. But in the meantime, it's interrupting and trying to discover what is being done here. Told of the Karen Mahi. What are the subcategories of Karen? Negifa, Nishikha, Rivitza, Ubi'ita. So the subcategories of Karen are Negifa, which actually the Torah mentions is Ki Gof, which we'll have to deal with in a second, why this is concept separate. But negifa means bumping its body. Using its body, almost like in hockey, checking the other player. The animal here is using its body to bump off or to damage something. Nishikha means to bite, but biting not for the purpose of eating. Biting simply for the purpose of doing damage. Rivitza means to sit on something, which is what they go to lay down. Instead of just laying down in an empty spot, they specifically lay on top of something and ruin the item that they're going to lay down on. Ubi'ita is to kick, as distinct from rega, which is when you're walking and something gets kicked because of the walking, meaning that the feet too mo, versus bi'ita is an intentional kick. So all of these items are not the usual behavior of the shor. And therefore, the common denominator, which we'll see in a second between them, is that they are not normal behavior of the shor. And since they're the unusual behavior of the shor, they are subcategory of Karen. Maishna negicha dekari le'av, dichtiv ki'igach. Why is negicha called the av? Because the Torah writes ki'igach. It uses the verb igach, and therefore negicha is considered to be a category or a av. Negifa namiktiv. The Torah also says ki'igof, which was the other part that I read, chigof shor et ish et shor e'ehu. So there again you have a negifa. So, hai negifa negichahi. Gemara says, no, that negifa is synonymous with negicha. Tanya, patach b'negifa, tisiyem negicha. That pasuk, when we bring in pasuk lamed hey, in Mishpatim, in Perichah Falav, it says, v'chigof shor et ish et shor e'ehu. And then, towards the later part of the pasuk, it says in lamed vav, Oh no, da kishur nagachum. Then it calls him a nagach. So therefore, the Torah is making synonymous the word negifa and negicha, or in essence saying the word here negifa means negicha. Lomar lecha, zoi negifa, zoi negicha. So they are the same. So it's not a toldah, but it's the same thing. That's because the negifa in the Torah is not the negifa that's being written here in the Gemara. The negifa of the Gemara is when he uses his body to do damage. He bumps with his body in order to do damage. The negifa in the Torah is negicha, which is goring. It is. Well, based on the pasuk that it changes from igof to negach, shows you that the words are used synonymously in the Torah to mean igach. Alright. Maishna gabi adam dichtav ki igach. When it talks about a short damaging human beings, it uses the term ki igach. Maishna gabi beima dichtav ki igof. Why by an animal does it say ki igof? Meaning, why does it change the verb? If they both mean to gore, then why does it change the verb from igach to igof? And truthfully, the Yerushalmi does go in that direction and say that both negicha and negifa are avot because they are mentioned in the pasuk. So the Gemara gives an answer. Adam dit le mazlo ktiv kigach. Person who has mazel, then the Torah writes kigach. Behema delet le mazlo ktiv kigof. A behema that does not have mazel, there it writes kigof. What does that mean that he has mazel? Rashi brings two interpretations. The first one is that a person has dat. A person has the ability to think and to defend themselves. So, in order for an animal to damage a person, it has to be igach, which is a goring with much more intent, because the individual has the ability to think and escape from the activities or the actions of the shor. So that's why it says ki igach by an adam. By a beima, which does not have dat, is more defenseless, and because of that, it's ki igof. With the less kavanah, the shor can do damage to another animal, and therefore it uses a, call it a lighter form of the verb, igach. That's one way to explain it. The other way to explain it is, Rashi says, it's harder to kill a person. Because the person has mazel, the way Rashi describes mazel in the Gemara in Shabbat is that he has a malach that guards him or takes care of him. But because the person has mazel, the death of the individual is much harder to come by. The death of a behemah, or an animal, is the normal course for an animal. So therefore, again, when it deals with a person, it says ki gach, because there it takes much more to kill the person because of the fact they have mazel or they have protection or divine protection, we'll call it. Whereas the animals don't have that, and therefore they use the verb ki gof. The nafkamina between these two reasons would be, for instance, a baby. So in the case where you say, if you give the first reason of Rashi, where the reason of mazel is that he has got to defend himself, a baby won't have that, and therefore the baby would be equivalent to a behema. On the other hand, if it was the case that you have mazel, that there's a malach, or something that protects the human being, that would be true of a baby just as much as it's true of a grown person, that would distinguish them from a behema. That's the definition of mazel, or mazel, that Rashi brings down over here. Right now, Gemara says, Umilta gav orche kamash malan. And as a sidebar, it teaches us this halacha, to muad adam avi muad behema. If an animal is mu'ad, meaning that on a recurring basis they have done damage to people, they have gored someone, then avi mu'ad beima, we can assume that he's also mu'ad, that if he does damage to an animal, he will do that. Mu'ad beima, lo avi mu'ad adam. But the other way is not true. Which means since human beings and animals are distinct and different, therefore, if you have the higher threshold covered, which means this animal is willing to, or can, or has on a recurring basis damaged a human being, which is the higher level, then certainly he will damage an animal which takes much less effort. So if he's already been determined three times to do something to a person, we'll assume that he will do that to animals. But the other way may not be true. Just because this animal does damage to other animals doesn't mean that he will do damage to human beings, because human beings are in a separate and higher category. And so therefore, just because it's mu'ad be'ima does not mean that it's mu'ad be'adam. Tosafot over here says, wait a minute, we have a sheet of Rapapa further on in the Masechta, that mu'ad be'adam is not mu'ad be'ima. Rapapa says that it doesn't work that way. Mu'ad be'adam, human beings are human beings, animals are animals, and it's totally separate categories. And therefore, if it's mu'ad, it has a recurring problem with human beings, doesn't mean that it has a recurring problem with animals, and vice versa too. That if you have a problem with behemot, doesn't mean it has a problem with man. Then how do you explain this Gemara based on that? So Tosfot says, "Hainu davka shenagach kimo bnei adam." That's only if it gored three people. Of a nagach adam, shor v'chamor. If it damaged a man, a shor and a chamor, then it'll be these three different categories of people that it damaged and animals that it damaged. It'll be muad for everything. On the other hand, if it attacks three animals, shor, chamor, and a gamal, it will not mean muad be adam. And so therefore, even for Rav Papa, there is a difference between adam and behemah. And that if the animal gores man amongst the three items that it gored, two animals and a man, then it's muad adam and muad behemah. On the other hand, if it damages just animals, it will not be muad the adam. So there, that distinction still exists, even for Rav Papa. And Tosva brings a second answer from the Rabbeinu Menachem, Perish Achimah, muad adam she muad the kol, the chazabo mi behemah. What happens if he is a muad for everything, to gore animals, to gore people, and then he does tshuva, the animal, and he stops goring animals. V'nishar muad adam, abi muad behemah. And he remains muad adam, that means that he didn't clear out the category of behemah. On the other hand, if he is chozer mi adam, it would be chazara for behemah. So even within Rav Papa, he says there's a difference, because if you already are determined to be a muad, and now you want to undo that, to undo it, you will have to undo adam separately from behemah. He simply doesn't gore, he sees animals, he doesn't gore them, after he's already been a problematic shor, then that tshuva is not good enough tshuva, because he still gores people. And that makes him muad for everything. On the other hand, if he stops goring people, that will also clear his slate with regards to animals. So even according to Rav Papa, divides between adam and behemah, he still has areas where adam has influence over behemah. The Tosafot brought two examples of that, either in becoming a muad, or in trying to remove his status of a muad, adam still has a different status than behemah. Nishicha, toda d'sheni, isn't biting a subcategory of shein? Why is it a subcategory of karen? So I already explained to you by defining nishicha in a particular way, I explained to you the answer to the Gemara. The Gemara says, lo, shein yesh hanala hazeka. The definition of shein is that the animal gets benefit from the damage that it does, like eating. Eating gives hana to the animal, so too any damage of shein has to involve benefit or pleasure to the animal. Ha ein anala hazeka. Here, when he bites, he's not biting for the joy, he's biting in a vindictive way, in a way that is doing damage but not providing hana. And that's why it's a subcategory of karen and not a subcategory of shein. It's interesting over here, there happens to be a machloket between the Rambam and the Rashba with regards to an animal that goes to eat something. In the end, he manages to bite it, but it falls out of his mouth, and he never gets the pleasure of eating it. Is that going to be a subcategory of shein, or is that going to be a subcategory of karen? The Rambam claims that that's a subcategory of karen, because if you look at the result in damage that was done in the end, it came through biting that had no pleasure associated with it. On the other hand, the Rashba says that it is a subcategory of shein, because the intent of the animal was to eat this item. Since it intended to eat it, in the end, he didn't get that chance, but that intent is enough to put it under the subcategory of shein. And as we move to the Masechta, we'll see that there are nafkaminot as to whether you are a subcategory of karen, including chatzi nezek, versus a subcategory of shein, where you would be paying nezek shalein from the beginning, but you might be patur in certain locations like Rishuta Rabim. Revitza, ubita, told other regularly. Wait a minute. Sitting down on something or kicking something should be a subcategory of regel. The way that the animal sits down is it bends its legs and it brings its weight down. And the way that it kicks is using its regel. So if that's the case, it should be a subcategory of regel. Gemara says, no, regel hezeka matsui. When it comes to regel, that is damage that is common and almost the natural behavior of the animal. The animal walks. When it walks, it tramples on things, it steps on things. That's the natural way of the animal. Hani en hezeka matsui. For the animal to kick, or for the animal to sit on something, to collapse on something, those are unusual behaviors, and that's why they're placed in the category of karen, and not in the category of regel. Ella, todoteim lav kiyotzben damar papa, ahai. The point that Rav Papa made, that there are subcategories that are not like the primary categories, on what did Rav Papa say this? Ilei mahani, if you say on these items here that we mentioned by karen, maishna karen, what's the difference between the primary category of karen, of goring, it's a case where the animal intends to do damage. It's trying to do damage. Umamonacha, it's your possession. You own it. Ushmirato alecha, and you are responsible for its behavior and to ensure that it doesn't do damage. Haninami, kabanatan lazik, umoncha, umshmiratan alecha. All these subcategories have that same character traits, which is they are intending to do damage. It's your possession, and you have to protect or stop the animal from doing this type of thing. Ella tolada de Karen kikaren. You must come to the conclusion that the subcategories of Karen are exactly like the primary category of Karen, and these would be under the rubric of what Rapapa said, toldotehem, kiyotzebam. There are things that are exactly alike, and here, by Karen, the subcategories of Karen are just like Karen. V'chi kama Rapapa shein v'regel. Must be that Rapapa is speaking about Shein and Regel, where he has this Totodam Lav Kiyosvan. Shein and Regel, hey Chiktive. Wait a minute. Shein and Regel, where do you find Shein and Regel in the Torah? So already, Kigach, we had a verb, but we didn't know what it was. We defined the verb as goring because we have examples in Navi and the Torah that show that using the Karen as the vehicle for damage is called Nigicha. So that we explain. But where in the Torah does it tell you that if the animal eats or the animal walks on something, it does damage, that you are responsible for that damage. Titania, because the Pasuk says, and Mars here quoting the Pasuk, Ki Aver Ish Sadeo Cheren, Vishilach Biro, Vier Biste Acher, Metav Sadeo, Metav Karmel Yishalim. So that, in some ways, is a cryptic Pasuk. So he uses the verbs Bier and Shilach. We don't know what those mean. Now we need to define what those are. So Mars says, Vishilach Zer Regel. Shilach, to send it in, is called Regel. V'chein Omer, because the pasuk says, "Mishalchei regel ashor v'achamor," the ones that send in the legs of the shore and the chamor, meaning that you see the word or the verb shilach used to describe behaviors of the trampling the hooves of the shore and the chamor. Ubier zo shein, and the verb bier there refers to shein. V'cheinu omer kasher yiba'er hagalal ad tumo, until the galal will be consumed, until it is finished. How you get from that to Shein is subject to a machloket. Rabbeinu Chananel says over here that it says kasher yiver aglau perish Rabbeinu Chananel that kamo nidbachin di even galau shashein domela even shayish, that the word galau over here refers to a stone, even galau, and teeth look like marble. So therefore the Shein is the connection to galau because it's a rock or a stone, and so too the teeth are like stones. That's where Rabbeinu Chananel suggests it. Rashi brings down two other possibilities. One is Hagalal. Hainu Shein Shepamim Migule Upamim Mechuse. So it says Ki Yivaer, and then Yivaer has Galal. Something that is Galui sometimes, and sometimes that is covered, which is the teeth. The teeth you can see when the mouth is open. You can't see the teeth when the mouth is closed. And that's what the reference is over here. Uchte Lishna Achrina, Rashi's last reasoning, which probably is the most likely of them, Lishnachrina, Galal Zerei. Galal means the feces, the dung of the animal. Shashen Mimbaeret Lamachal, the teeth grind, chew up the food, Venasit Galal, and then it becomes waste. Kamo Galalei Adam VeGalalei Beima. The terminology that's used for the dung of animals, the feces of man, is the word Galal. And therefore what it says is, Kasher Yivaer HaGalal Al Tumo, that it's consumed like the way that the animals consume and produce dung. Galal ad tumo, until it was totally wiped out or eliminated. Amamar, v'shilach zohar regel. So now you told us the word shilach in the pasuk means regel. V'cheinu omer mishalchei regel ashor v'achamor. Taima dichtav rachmana mishalchei regel ashor v'achamor. Had it not been for that pasuk in Navi, then you wouldn't have known that the word v'shilach means regel. Hai lav hachi by mukitla. What even in break the pasuk mean? The pasuk uses the verb vishilach. What type of damage are you speaking about if it's not rega? What are your other options? E Karen, Tiv. If you're talking about the damage of Karen, we already had ki gach, ki gof. We took care of that damage. That's already mentioned separately in the Torah. E Shein. If it's a damage of Shein, we just said to you that uvier, the word biur, means to consume, to eat. So Shein's already taken care of. What else do you have left? So it seems like by process of elimination, the word mishilach would have to mean regel, irrespective of the pasuk. Itzrich, you need it. Sachadat chamine idividi ashein. I would thought the whole pasuk was talking about shein. But had the mechal yakarna, had the lo mechal yakarna. The difference is whether when you eat, did he wipe out, destroy the object that he was eating completely, or did he leave behind? The way Rashi explains it over here is that it depends what he ate. If he ate in like a veggie patch, that vegetable patch, when he eats it, the stuff will regrow. So even though it may not regrow totally the way it was, but it will regrow. So that's galomachal yakarna. That's something where it's not destroyed. Whereas if he eats some sort of plant that he pulls out of the ground and won't regrow, that's the machal yakarna. That's why Rashi explains it. Tosafot doesn't like that explanation as much. It says what Rashi describes as being lo machal yakarna is still called machal yakarna. When he eats the vegetables, in the end, he destroyed the vegetable, even though they'll grow back. And the balim could have picked that, and then it would have grown back itself too. The fact that the animal did it means that he destroyed that which was there. Therefore, Tosafot says that it actually be, the difference in Sheni will be in the nature of the Hana'ah, which will come up in the Toledot that we'll see later, which is that Shein means to eat. That is Mechal Yakarna. When you eat, the Hana'ah, the benefit and the pleasure they're getting is from the eating, which is destruction of the item. Now then, the Gemara will describe later on other types of damage where he gets Hana'ah, but the item's not destroyed. For instance, it likes to roll around in the fruits. It rolls around their fruits because it gets pleasure from rubbing up against them and sitting on them, but in the end, the fruits are all there. They might be mushed, but they're still around, and the item is still there, and that's the lo mechal yakarna. That's the definition. So therefore, it tells you, kamash malan, that this is talking about regel, and not two types of shame. Well, if it's not talking about two types of shame, ashadu kimna a regel, shame de lo mechal yakarna minolan. How do you know that shame that doesn't wipe out the item, that the item is still extant, how do we know there that you're chayav for that? My answer is, dumi de regel. Because there, the juxtaposition, the puzzle between regel and shein tells you that they are similar in nature. Ma regel is lo shna mechal yakarna, lo shna lo mechal yakarna. By the case of regel, where there's no differentiation between whether it wipes out the keren or doesn't wipe out the keren, because there it doesn't say ubier, doesn't say that it destroyed it. It simply says vishilach, that it went and did damage. So it's irrespective of whether the damage is consuming the item completely or not. Regel you're chayav for. Because the most likely or common case of regel is the lo mechal yakarna. Afshein lo shna mechal yakarna lo shlam lo mechal yakarna. We won't make any distinction between whether you wiped out the item that it was getting that not from or not. Both of those cases you will be chayav. Rashi asks over here, why don't you just simply say that the pasuk's time had a case of lo mechal yakarna. The big case in the pasuk is talking about a case where he didn't wipe out the keren. And of course, then you would know that when he does wipe out the object itself, of course he's chayav. And he actually says it in other words, but the answer in essence is, when you have a choice in a pasuk to explain it, and you have two options, you're going to always explain it with the lesser of the two chidushin. So over here, if I have a choice to explain shein, one possibility is to say it's shein where he wipes out the item. Another one is to say it's shein where the item is still extant. The puzzle would definitely be talking about a case where he wipes out everything, because that's the lesser of the two chidushin. In a case where he leaves over the keren, maybe he should be chayav over there. So I need another puzzle to teach me that. That's from the hekesh to regel. But otherwise, had I just had one pasuk of shein, I would have picked lesser of the two chidushin, and I would say you only chayav, it would be air when you wipe it out entirely. Then now we just explain the source for regel and the pasuk and why it was necessary to have a pasuk. Tomorrow the Gemara will do the same thing with Shane and discuss why we need a puzzle to teach us a Shane. Otherwise, what would you have said that the puzzle was time at if it wasn't for Shane? Okay, we're going to stop here. 11 lines down on the top of Gimel Amud Aleph.